and welcome to the Practical Cardiology Podcast. I'm Patrick Campbell, Senior Editor of PracticalCardiology.com, and in this episode, you'll hear my interview with Dr. Hyung Chung, an Associate Professor of Medicine and Pathology at the Yale School of Medicine and Director of Translational Research in the Yale Pulmonary Vascular Disease Program. Dr. Chung recently led a study examining one of the most pressing issues in the treatment of COVID-19 patients, blood clots. In the following interview, we discuss the potential mechanism behind these blood clots in COVID-19 patients, as well as their overall impact on treatment course. Without further ado, here is my interview with Dr. Chung. Dr. Chung, if you wouldn't mind giving our guests a little bit of introduction on your background, then we can dive into the questions we have.
Yeah, my name is Hyung Chung. I'm an associate professor of medicine in the section of cardiovascular medicine here at Yale University. And it's been a pleasure working with many of our colleagues here at Yale on trying to better understand the different aspects of disease processes that's going on COVID-19. So thanks for having me.
And thank you for taking the time to speak with me today. I really appreciate it. And so for those of you who don't know, Dr. Chung was a co-senior author on a recent study published in The Lancet Hematology that really tried to get to the root cause of blood clots in COVID-19 patients. Now, before we dive into that, can you just take me through from your perspective how our understanding of the risk of stroke is associated, or the risk of stroke associated with COVID-19 has evolved as we've seen the sort of the pandemic progress? I know during the beginning, we really didn't hear about the stroke risk. And then at one point, it seemed like that was the thing we heard the most about coming out of studies. Now it's sort of seemed to fade back a little bit. Is that risk as prevalent as ever, or are we just sort of learning more about the actual prevalence of this?
Right. I mean, I think it's an evolving situation as we learn more and more about the disease processes. I'm a cardiologist by training, and what really piqued my interest, especially in the beginning of emergence of COVID-19, was that there were many reports coming out of China that patients who have underlying cardiovascular disease were the ones who fared the worst when they were infected with COVID-19. And, you know, there were a number of studies suggesting that there was cardiac injury in some of these patients, which was highly prevalent, presenting as elevated levels of cardiac biomarkers such as troponin, also BNP and others, suggestive of cardiac injury in these patients. Also, stroke, as you mentioned, has also been, you know, prevalent to different degrees in different reports. Some reports suggesting much higher incidence of stroke, others perhaps reporting not as many cases of strokes in their COVID-19 cohorts. But I think what is kind of universally emerging is that, you know, COVID-19, unlike many other viral infections that we face in the recent past, is an injury that does have a significant burden on the vascular system, in the cardiovascular system, not just from stroke perspective, but also from the cardiac perspective and a number of other organs as well, where there's also demonstrated formation of blood clots in the lungs, as well as in other vascular beds in the body. So, you know, with that in mind, you know, our kind of, you know, myself and a number of other investigators here at Yale were interested in trying to see if we can get a better understanding of this, what is going on with the blood vessels, and could that be potentially contributing to the increased risk of blood clots and the coagulopathy in these COVID-19 patient population.
All right, thank you for that. And now just diving into your study a little bit further, we've got mountains and mountains of data related to COVID-19. It's hats off to clinicians like yourself and other researchers. You guys have really stepped up and got good data out about this disease. What does your study add to the ongoing discussion related to the care of these patients?
Sure. So you know, as I mentioned, you know, what initially piqued my interest as a cardiologist is the cardiovascular manifestations of COVID-19. And that kind of along with a line of evidence that was emerging from mainly from autopsy studies, where there were suggestions that the endothelial cells or the inner lining of every blood vessel in your body were being either directly or indirectly affected by the COVID-19, the SARS-CoV-2 virus. So, you know, and those were predominantly autopsy studies where on autopsy samples, people were either detecting evidence of viral infection into the endothelial cells, or also in other cases, evidence of endothelial injury or endothelial death in patients who had died from COVID-19 infection. So that was one emerging piece of data that was emerging from patients who had severe cases of COVID-19. And the second aspect was the coagulopathy aspect, that these patients were also much more predisposed to developing blood clots. And between myself and Alfred Lee, who is the other senior author on the manuscript, you know, and he, Alfred is a hematologist at Yale, and he was predominantly interested in the coagulopathy side. Why are these patients developing blood clots? So, and he had generated some initial evidence that there was an elevated level of a protein called von Willebrand factor. It's a protein that can be detected, that you can order through the clinical lab, and it can be detected from the clinical samples. That was significantly elevated in COVID-19 patients we were treating at Yale New Haven Hospital, who were both severely affected, meaning that they were admitted to the intensive care unit, as well as you know, moderately ill from COVID-19, where they were sick enough to be hospitalized, but not necessarily requiring an ICU level of care. The challenge with von Willebrand factor is that it is not fully endothelial specific. It is produced in endothelial cells, but other cell types, including platelets, can make a von Willebrand factor. So, you know, based on that initial observation made by Alfred and our other colleagues on the hematology side, we started to think about ways we can potentially be a little bit more selective in trying to find markers that can detect endothelial injury. There's currently no commercially available test for endothelial injury. So, you know, we put our heads together and try to think about other tests that we can conduct in the research setting. These would be research assays. And we chose a number of markers, and the one that ended up being the most informative was an endothelial protein called thrombomodulin. So thrombomodulin is a protein that is expressed much preferentially in the endothelial cells. It is highly expressed in endothelial cells compared to any other cell type. It is usually on the surface of the endothelial cells, and what can happen in cases of severe illnesses. In other cases, prior to COVID-19, is that in cases of patients who have sepsis or significant bacterial infection, or patients who have significant respiratory distress, that this circulating levels of thrombomodulin has been found to be elevated in the past. And it is, you know, indirectly a marker of endothelial injury or endothelial activation when the thrombomodulin gets cleaved off from the endothelial cells and can be detected in the circulating blood. So we chose to analyze a blood sample from patients with COVID-19 infection, both in the ICU population and in the non-ICU population. And what we found was interesting in that in the ICU population, there was a trend towards the soluble levels of thrombomodulin being elevated. So it was a trend. It wasn't statistically significant overall as a group of comparing ICU versus non-ICU population. But when we divided up the patients in the ICU population according to the level of thrombomodulin, and you know, we had a robust enough patient sample that a good number of the patients unfortunately had passed away by the time we completed our study, we found that there was a significant difference in the survival rate among those patients with elevated levels of thrombomodulin versus lower levels of thrombomodulin, where higher level of thrombomodulin had a strong correlation with mortality in our patient cohort.
All right, thank you for that. And now, just before we go any further forward, because I know you guys are looking into possibly developing a test or trying to find a new treatment to protect the endothelial layer, is there any limitations or anything that you would like clinicians or people to keep in mind when reading your study to keep away from overinterpretation of the results?
Right, no, absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, I think under the circumstances, we try to test as many blood samples as we could possible. But overall, it is a limited number of patient samples that we were able to test. I think it would certainly be fantastic to replicate our findings or validate our findings in a larger cohort of patients to make sure that our findings in our number of patients can be replicated in a larger patient population from other institutions. The challenge is that our blood test was collected from each individual at one time point. It would certainly be interesting to see, are there variations in the, are there changes in the level of thrombomodulin that might be more predictive of disease outcome? And these are kind of studies that we have ongoing at the moment. And also from a therapeutic perspective, the question is, is there, what, I guess a couple of things. One is thrombomodulin, soluble thrombomodulin, really the best marker of endothelial injury or endothelial death? We are considering a number of other markers or other endothelial-specific proteins, which may be also elevated in patients who are critically ill from COVID-19 infection. And once we, I think, identify perhaps the best marker or best set of biomarkers that might represent endothelial injury, I think the next question becomes, what can we do about this therapeutically? Certainly, I think given the prevalence of coagulopathy in these patient population, I think number of institutions, including Yale, have instituted an anticoagulation algorithm where we treat most of these patients with prophylactic or therapeutic doses of anticoagulation. I think ultimately, if there is a treatment modality that could potentially be aimed at protecting or the preserving the endothelial layer, I think that is something else that could be thought about as a potential therapeutic strategy as well.
All right, thank you for that. And now, so I know, as you stated, you guys are looking into sort of a test that could help assess thrombomodulin. Until that test is available, or until there is a suitable test for that, is there anything that you think clinicians, practicing clinicians, should really take away from your study and the results of it, if they might be treating COVID-19 patients in the ICU?
Right. So, one test that is currently available that can be ordered by any hospital, many pretty much all hospital system is von Willebrand factor. Again, it is a caveat being it is not endothelial specific, but we did find that there was a correlation between levels of von Willebrand factor and outcomes from the ICU patients with COVID-19. So, that is a test that is readily available to clinicians taking care of these COVID-19 patient population, and it may provide some initial guidance in terms of the degree of vascular injury or endothelial injury that may be going on in the patients that they're taking care of. So until a more specific endothelial test can be available, I think that would be a good test to consider when physicians are taking care of these patients with COVID-19.
Sorry. And now, could we just dive into a little bit? I know we touched on it in the first question, just sort of looking at blood clots and stroke at large. What do you think is the sort of, I guess it would be from your perspective only, but the prevalence of blood clots in patients with COVID-19? Is it something that you have found is pretty common, or is it something that is in specific patients that have pre-existing conditions? What is the prevalence in sort of real world situations?
Right. That's a great question, Patrick, but it's a challenging question to answer because we don't routinely test these patients for the presence of blood clot. For example, all of the patients I admitted to the intensive care unit who require mechanical ventilation. I think it's certainly possible that many of these patients do have pulmonary embolism or blood clots in their lungs, but unfortunately, given the challenges of taking care of these patients, transporting them from the ICU to the CT scanner and to other parts of the hospital where we can get a more definitive answer as to the presence of blood clot, we don't routinely do these tests that will give us a definitive diagnosis. But from review of kind of the autopsy literature of COVID-19 patients, I think it is fair to say that many of these studies have identified the presence of blood clots, whether it be in the lungs, in the brain, and elsewhere, in the majority of patient population who die from COVID-19. So I think it's certainly a very high prevalence of blood clots in these patients, but something that has been so far underdiagnosed, just given the given what we're trying to do in terms of protecting the hospital staff and exposure of others to patients who have the infection.
All right, thank you for that. And now let me ask you, as someone who is an associate professor of medicine, specifically in cardiology and pathology, what are some of the largest unanswered questions that still linger regarding COVID-19 and cardiovascular health?
Right. I think a key question is, whether, from kind of a more of a mechanistic perspective, is this a virus that directly infects the endothelial cells and the blood vessel cells? There's a suggestion that, the COVID-19 virus might, in addition to perhaps infecting the endothelial cells themselves, it might infect the cells surrounding the endothelial cells called the pericytes, which might be driving the disease process in these patients with severely severe cases of COVID-19. So the question is, does it directly infect the endothelial cells, or perhaps is the vascular injury that we see in this patient population a consequence of what is happening in the rest of the body? I mean, certainly there is evidence of kind of this immune hyperactivation of the immune system, where you have multiple cytokines that are being detected at high levels in these patients with critical COVID-19 cases, and could perhaps be a consequence of having this elevated levels of cytokines and inflammatory factors that are affecting the endothelial cells as an indirect consequence of COVID-19 infection rather than the virus itself infecting the endothelial cells directly. And I think that's a key question that will need to be figured out to try to best understand the vascular pathology in these patient populations and try to come up with the best way to treat what we see in terms of the vascular injury that we see in these patients.
Okay, and now just before I let you go, I know that we've been seeing a trend sort of in literature of these COVID-19 patients admitted into ICUs sort of seem to become younger and younger as the weeks and months go on. Have you noticed anything in your own personal experience in regard to the severity of vascular injury as this has gone on and began to infect and impact younger populations?
Right. No, that's a great question. And, I think, the system I'm most familiar with is our own hospital system, Yale New Haven Health System. And fortunately, the overall number of patients being admitted to our hospital has gone down significantly over the course of the past 2 months, which is fantastic. And with the decrease in the overall number of patients being admitted to the hospital, the number of patients, the proportion of that patient being admitted to the intensive care unit also has gone down significantly. But even at the peak of the kind of the COVID-19 pandemic here in Connecticut, we saw that there, when you're looking at the sickest patients, these are patients who are on mechanical ventilation and other forms of ventilatory support. We saw there's a wide range of age. It's not just that the sickest patients, it may be that the sickest patients tend to be on the older side, but, we saw patients who are as young as in their 20s or 30s who were severely ill requiring mechanical ventilation and who ultimately didn't survive. So I'm kind of given the overall downward trend in the number of patients being admitted to our hospital system, it's tough to say, is there perhaps a decrease in the severity of illness? But, I think that's, something that, as we see more and more of these cases, across the country, across the world, I think it's something that, we're certainly thinking about. And, I think it'd be great to see that the disease severity is improving or, I think it's still a question up in the air.
All right, and just lastly, was there anything that you would like to touch on about your study that I may not have asked you about, or sort of the treatment of COVID-19 at large from a cardiovascular perspective before I let you go?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's been, I mean, I think as bad as COVID-19 pandemic has been for, not just our hospital system, but many hospital systems and, across the US and across the world, I think, perhaps one thing to reflect on has been how this really brought multiple clinicians and researchers together to really put this study together. It literally took us about 2.5 months to go from conceptual, coming up with the concept of trying to do this study to, being fortunate to get the manuscript published as of yesterday. So, really the tremendous amount of teamwork and efforts that's gone into, everyone's kind of vested interest to better understand the disease process and try to come up with better ways to take care of patients who are affected by it.
All right, well, I just want to say thank you, Dr. Chung, and thank you to all of your colleagues for putting together the study. For our listeners who haven't checked it out yet, I really encourage you to go do so in the Lancet Hematology. And thank you again, Dr. Chung, for taking the time to speak with us this afternoon. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's it for this episode of Practical Cardiology. I'm Patrick Campbell. Thank you for listening.